I want to say good morning to all of you. It is good to be here this morning, and it's one of those mornings that might have felt kind of nice just to sleep in a little bit. I don't know if anybody felt like staying between the covers a little longer or not, but it's also a good day when you're a Mason to be preaching and being inside because you couldn't work anyway, and I'm very thankful for the rain. I hope we're getting it at home. As I had said earlier, this is the first family week that our family's been able to attend. I told my wife, I'm really enjoying it. It's relaxing. We've taken our family to CBS, places like that, which is a Bible school, and there you feel a little more under a microscope because, you know, it's a bunch of young people, and they're running around doing their thing, and then here comes the family, you know, and the one-year-old's not happy, and we're trying to get through the food line, and here we're just all going through the food line together as families, and it's good to know that we're a normal family and to be surrounded with normal families. But one thing I thought about last night, and that kind of ties into what I want to talk about this morning, I was really amazed at what I heard coming from the families here, you know, and I kind of wondered too with our family, well, if we stand up in front of everybody, how's this going to be? And to see, especially some of you ones that have older children, and to see that your years of singing together or interacting, doing life together, and how you can get up and do something together, it was inspiration to me. It's just good to know as a young father, and I'm not all that young really, but I got started a little later than some of you. It's good to know and to see examples of how when we do things God's way and we're consistent and faithful, our children will make their choice, whatever it may be, but we can, I believe, be promised that God will be faithful to us as well. And that's an encouragement. So I was given the title this morning, Valuing Each Child's Contribution to Our Homes. And I have observed that most of you here have more children than we do. We have four. Many of you here have more children than we do. And I was kind of hoping, actually, that the children may not even be in here this morning, some of the younger ones, because I thought, wow, I could tell a lot of stories about my children that could really, you know, make this talk a little more, I don't know, interesting. And I'm going to tell a few stories about them. I didn't even tell them I was going to do this. But I'll be respectful because I know my wife grew up with a preacher for a dad, and I think, you know, she appreciated if he was respectful and didn't tell too many stories about her, especially when she was older. but, you know, have you thought about recently, I'm sure you have at some point or the other, but when you hold that new child in your arms and you look down, did it go through your mind, who will this child become? What's their potential? What could they do for the kingdom of God? I'm assuming that for many of us here, thoughts like that were probably going through our minds, but maybe sometimes then when you're, you know, when they've just spilled the milk everywhere and they're cried all night and whatever, maybe they're being disrespectful or not wanting to work or something, and maybe those thoughts are, you're not seeing the big picture quite as clearly. But I think it's good for us as parents to be thinking about God's plan for our children, what God has intended for them, and not just thinking about who they might become, but also facilitating that. What am I doing as a father to help my child be all that they can be? Obviously, we don't get the final say in that, but I think we do play a tremendous role in that. So we'd like to think a little bit about what each child can and will contribute. You know, I had to think about it when we had our first, Allison is our oldest, and she was a beautiful child, and I'm kind of biased. I thought all of our babies were beautiful. I'm sure you thought all of yours were too. We're actually going to read about a baby this morning. I'm not quite sure what they thought at first, but you can turn to Genesis 25 for that. We'll be turning to Genesis 25. But back to what I was saying about when we had our first child, Allison. And she was you know, I didn't know how fatherhood was going to be. I was a little older when we got married. I had taught school for 4 years. And frankly, there was a time I wasn't quite sure if I how I felt about having children or even being married. I did, you know, the first year I taught school was really challenging. Challenging enough that I began to wonder, do I have what it takes to raise children, to be a dad? And I mentioned this yesterday morning, but an older teacher, an older man that had taught for years, he said, just remember, the children, a lot of the children that I was teaching did not come from Christian homes. They came from troubled settings, and it was really difficult. And he said, your children, you will have them from the very beginning. And that was a challenge to think about. But it's so true. So anyway, we brought Allison home from the hospital, or from the care center there, and she slept all night long. And I had heard these tales of, you know, no sleep, and and she slept all night. And so then I got my courage up, and I took her and held her in church. I'm not sure how many Sundays it was. It was fairly soon. She was pretty young yet. I thought, I can do this. And she slept the whole sermon, whole time. And I thought, well, this isn't too bad. I mean, what's the big deal here? What's this noise over here beside me anyway, you know? Well, then our second child, Benson, came along, and he was completely different. Now, he was a very good child, too, but his personality was completely different. Did you experience that as a father, as parents? Have you experienced that? You know, and each way, you know, Benson is much more full steam ahead, and if he's happy, he's happy, and if he's not, he's not. He kind of reminds me of my dad. My dad is so expressive. My dad just got a new truck, and he is like a kid in a candy store. He's 76 years old. He took me out there, and he's like, sit in the truck, sit in the seat. You know, this thing feels, he said, you're going to have to drive this truck. I mean, it's just a little, it's probably the newest truck he ever owned. It's a little Maverick or whatever those little Ford trucks are. He's so excited, and that's what one of the things I love about my dad is, like, he's so expressive, and he loves life. And then our third, Melanie, came along, different yet. And, you know, I think that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing. So you can begin to feel like you have this parenthood thing down pat, and then you realize it's not a one-size-fits-all. Your child might be very similar to you. They might like a lot of the same things you like. They might kind of think the way you do, and this becomes probably clear as they get older. And then the next one may actually have a very different personality and not do things the way that you do and not think the way that you do. But I think it's good for us to remember. I really appreciated what the one brother said last night about how they'd prayed for children and the children are such a gift. I think it is so important for us to remember that God has given us these gifts. They're a gift from God, and He had a reason for putting them in our home. So let's read now Genesis 25. I'm going to read verses 21 through 28. We have here Isaac and Rebekah. And I'm just going to read these verses, and I'd like to think just a little bit about these twin boys. Now, I notice we have, is it one set of twins here? Do we have more than one set? Okay, there's some girls that are two. Okay. Yeah. I enjoyed getting to know a family in Belize that had two sets of twins. They had twin boys and twin girls, and the boys you could barely tell apart. The girls, you literally could not tell them apart, except the one had a little mole right under her eye, and so when people would come up and talk to them, they would, and it got so bad that the girls were like, don't look at our eyes, to tell them apart. But here we have twin brothers, and these brothers were very different, okay? So let's begin reading in Genesis 25. We'll read verse 21 to 28. It says, And Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren, and the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. And the children struggled together within her, and she said, If it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said unto her, Two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels, and one people shall be stronger than the other people. The elder shall serve the younger. And when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out all red, over like an hairy garment, and they called his name Esau. Now, if your child was like Esau, covered in hair, what would you think? You might be, oh, whoa, what happened here? And then after that came his brother out, And his hand took hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob. And Isaac was 80 years old when she bare them, so he was 60 years old. And the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter, a man of the field, and Jacob was a plain man, dwelling in tents. And then verse 28, I think, is kind of a sad verse. It says, Isaac loved Esau because he did eat of his venison, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Now, y'all don't have to have a hand raise here, but I'm going to ask just a few questions for you as parents to think about. And the children are all sitting here, so they're just going to have to listen in, okay? Children, I'll try not to go too long this morning. I know this is probably the part of Family Week that's maybe the part that aren't quite as excited about. But as a parent, do you have a favorite? No, right? None of us do. I can honestly say I don't. But there are some parents in the Bible that did have favorites, okay? And Isaac and Rebekah weren't the only ones. Their son had a problem with it too. Do you find, though, that in your lineup of children, you may have 2, 3, 4, 5, however many, some of you have a goodly sized family. It's good, it's wonderful. Do you find that maybe it's a little easier to relate to one of your children than to the other? Is that being a little too honest? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know that that's always the case. I think there are certainly times where I'm finding that one of my children is responding better to me than the other, and so in that moment I'm kind of feeling, you know, a little different about the relationship. But for whatever reason, I'd like you to think a little bit, why did Isaac love Esau more? Why did Rebekah love Jacob more? And it seems to me that it was obvious enough that the Bible mentions it. Now, these two boys were very different. Esau was a hunter. He roamed about in the fields. Do we have any boys here that like to hunt? Kind of. I enjoy it. I like to bow hunt every once in a while. I'm not a true hunter, but I go out and bumble around and usually shoot at least one deer a year. So I enjoy the hunting, and he enjoyed to hunt. But it says that Jacob was a plain man. And the Bible says that this means, in some ways, it would kind of give the idea that he was just respectable. He was a shepherd. He stayed home, helped his mom probably. Esau wasn't home helping mom. He was out roaming around. You get the sense of someone that maybe not quite as disciplined, more impulsive. We know that he wasn't as respectful of his parents' wishes. And so Rebekah began to love Jacob more. And over time, this began to drive a wedge, I think. Now, could we say that both of these boys had something to contribute to the family? Did they both have something to contribute? I think so. Were there some real challenges that both of these boys had that needed some work? I would say so. And so we'd like to build off of that just a little bit as we go along. And we'll probably come back to Esau and Jacob a little bit as we go along too. You know, one thing that I did notice was that Isaac prayed specifically for these boys. And he didn't get one, he got two. The Lord answered his prayer in a miraculous way. I think it's important for us to remember that regardless of our children's personalities, and I don't want to overdo this thing of personality this morning, but our children do all have different personalities, okay? Regardless of their personalities, each of our children has been made in the image of God. Okay. Sometimes that image can feel pretty hidden. I mean, you know, it's not shining through right now. There's work that needs done. But regardless of our child's personality, they have been made in God's image. And regardless of their personality, they may actually be a fairly respectful, quiet, mild child. They also have that fallen nature, regardless of who they are. I had to think of another two men in the Bible, Paul and Barnabas. You know, Paul I see Paul as a strong personality. He was all out. He was a zealous man. Barnabas is called the son of consolation. He was more mild. He was kind. And when Paul became a Christian, when he came to the Lord, we're told that the other Christians were afraid of him. They didn't even want to meet Paul. And so who took Paul under his wing and introduced him? Barnabas did, right? Later on, Paul was kind of the leader. When they went out in the mission field together, Paul led out. And these two men clashed over John Mark. Remember that? John Mark went with them on their, I think it was their first missionary journey. I didn't look into this real closely. Barnabas, and then partway along, he quit. He couldn't make it. Later on, Barnabas, when they were going to go again, Barnabas said, let's take John Mark with us. I think he's grown up a little bit. I think he can come along. Paul said, no, John Mark can't go. He gave out. He's not willing. He's not able to go. And they disagreed. I had to wonder, how many times did Barnabas actually stand up to Paul? Paul doesn't seem like the sort of person you would say no to very often. And they clashed about it strongly enough that they separated. Who was right? It's been kind of, as a pastor sometimes, it's interesting to see this even working out. You have, and maybe even as parents, as mom and dad, you know, one is a little more, hold the line. Well, this is what has to happen. And the other is more compassionate. Well, let's give another chance. Let's be a little patient. And I think we need both, actually. It's not good just to be all mercy or all black and white. But I would like to encourage us this morning in thinking a little bit more about the different personalities and different things that your children bring. First of all, affirm and encourage the interest and giftings of your children, especially in light of how they can build the kingdom of God. I would like to encourage us in this. And in the busyness of life, and maybe especially for us, we have young children, and sometimes it feels like we put all of our energy just into getting them fed, making sure they're not fighting, making sure they're not tearing the house apart, getting everything put away before we go to bed, and now we're back in bed. And it can feel like we're just kind of just staying ahead of it. You know, I don't know if any of the rest of you have ever felt that or not, but I think you probably have. But in all of that, to begin to see, and some of you have older children, and so you've seen the fruition of this. It's working out, and you're seeing this come to fruition more than we have. But to begin to see, okay, my child, they have a loving heart, or they have a zeal. They're yes, right now they're tearing the house apart. But that energy, if it's directed, think of what that could be done for the Lord. Maybe my child is an introvert. They're very quiet. They don't want to talk to anyone. And or maybe they're just like I was when I was young. I gave my parents some gray hair. I said anything that came to my mind, regardless of where I was. And I'm sure there were times my mom was about didn't know what to think. But you know, to begin to channel that, to see that potential, I think it's so important. And so encourage these gifts, especially in light of kingdom work. Not just encouraging them to, you know, be who you can be, or you know, get really good at this so that you can impress everybody, you know. That's not the point. But to encourage those things in light of kingdom work. God gives our children so many different talents and abilities. And I've been fascinated. You know, I am not an artistic person. If you would ask me, like if I had been told to paint a little person up there on those boards, I don't know what would have happened. It would have probably looked like something, but it wouldn't have been anything real great. But now my children actually are fairly artistic. I mean, they enjoy drawing, they enjoy painting, and I think it's great. you know, are we okay with the fact that our children may never excel at some of the things that we're very proficient in? We're good at, we enjoy doing, and well, son, now you come along and do this with me, and well, he's not really interested, you know, and so are we okay with that? On the other hand, can we be okay with the fact that very likely they may pass us by? And eventually, they say the best teachers are the ones the students surpass the teacher. Can we accept that, or are we going to be threatened by that? On the flip side of affirming and encouraging, I think it's very important for us to acknowledge our child's weaknesses. See, we're wanting to shape them and form them in the short time that we have, not just saying, wow, my child is this wunderkind, or however they say that word. It's a German word. I don't think that's how you pronounce it. But, you know, what a prodigy my child is. Well, no, most of our children are actually quite normal. And they have wonderful talents, but they also can be very naughty, unfortunately. I remember when I was a school teacher, I used to feel a little frustrated at times. I had, for the most part, very good support from my parents. But there were, every once in a while, you would get this sense from a parent that he's just not in touch with reality. Like, he just has this idea that his child is just, my child could never do this or never be this way. And it's like, I'm sorry, the reality's a little different. And so I kind of had to wonder, when I became a parent, how's this going to be now? I'm on the other side of things. And I'd say for the most part, it's gone wonderfully. There was one thing I can think of, and our children are, it's kind of a personal thing, but it came up where it almost felt like, is this fair? Have you ever felt that way as a parent? That my child isn't being treated fairly. And boy, I started feeling kind of protective, and I was like, okay, Adam, you taught school 4 years. Just lay here and relax a little bit. And one of my co-pastors actually had the nerve. I called him and I said, I'm feeling a little frustrated. He said, just take a deep breath. And I thought, the nerve of you to say that to me, take a deep breath. But it was very good advice, okay? It's so important for us not to see our children through rose-colored glasses. And it's kind of, I find it a bit of a maybe a fine line to walk, because I think our children should feel supported by us. And maybe especially at those times when they, you know, they're at a low point. You know, someone needs to be behind them. But at the same time, we're not affirming that behavior, that part of their personality that needs more sanctification, right? So we're all about affirming and working alongside of God in bringing out their good qualities, at the same time disciplining and bringing under control those parts of their personality, those character qualities that need work. And back to Esau and Jacob. You know, Jacob was more, he was a plain man. He helped his mom. He was a shepherd. And to all appearances, he may seem like the model child. But was he a model child? Well, he had some pretty glaring deficiencies. And you know what's sad? His mother actually supported him and helped him to be deceitful to his own father. Now, was that beneficial to him? Absolutely not. Esau was maybe more obviously deficient. He was out, you know, roaming the wilds and maybe not as disciplined as he should be. And he went out and married wives his parents didn't want him to marry. And he was kind of the black sheep of the family, but he did love and respect his father, clearly. He had positive qualities. I had to wonder how this could have been. Now, we know it was all part of God's plan, so I'm not going to question God, but I had to wonder if the parents would have focused more on loving both their boys, encouraging their positive qualities, while being honest about where they need discipline, could that story have been a little different in their personal family? I believe God could have performed his will regardless of it. Did Jacob have to deceive his father in order for God to perform his will? I don't believe so. Now, some of you may take me to task on that, but I don't believe so. And so, encouraging those positive character qualities while being willing to be honest and disciplined the parts that need sanctification. I think it's also so important, and I'm going to move down. That was kind of what I really wanted to focus on this morning, but I have a few other things I'd like to look at. Communicating clearly your love and approval. You know, I have never questioned whether my parents love me, and that security has had a tremendous impact on my life. So my dad loved to tell this story, and I used to kind of cringe every time he told it because he told it with such joy. And it used to embarrass me, and now I looking back, I realize it's actually been very beneficial. So Dad said, we wanted to have 12 children, but they only had one. They had one girl. And So he said, one time there was a preacher from Canada, actually. I should know his name because he's probably the reason I'm here. But he prayed over mom, and lo and behold, about a year later, I was born. So I was, in dad's version, I was the miracle child. And it was 13 years after my oldest sister was born. So, you know, by the time I came along, pretty much all hope was gone. And then I was born 3 months early, and it was kind of touch and go. And anyway, this whole story, Dad loved to tell this story. He would tell the story and I just, oh, don't tell the story. But, you know, looking back now, I'm like, I have a gift of knowing that my parents really wanted me. And, you know, I would believe that all of us, we wanted our children. We were looking forward to them coming. But are we communicating that to them? Do they know that? My dad did a great job of it. He really did. And it has impacted our relationship. Absolutely. I never dealt with insecurity. And probably one thing that has made that even clearer to me is that because my parents couldn't have a large biological family, I was the last biological child they had. They did foster care for years, and my two younger sisters are adopted. And they were a part of our home ever since I can remember. They're my sisters. But they have dealt much more than I with insecurity. Even though they'll say, yes, we've always felt loved by dad and mom. Every once in a while they say, okay, Adam, they love you more when they're mad or whatever, but they realize that's not really true. Dad doesn't always really help with the storytelling of his, but they know everyone in our family is loved. But they have dealt much more with insecurity because of the fact that their parents gave them up for adoption. And so when your children know that, yes, you belong, and part of that, I think, can simply be, do your children know that you want to spend time with them? That's maybe a small thing. But the successful fathers that I have seen are fathers that have been intentional, and mothers, but I think maybe fathers, this is a little bit more of a struggle sometimes because of other responsibilities. And maybe especially as a preacher, you know, you get called here, you get called there. Do our children know that you would prefer to be with them? Maybe you can't for whatever reason, but that would be your preference. Or do they get the sense that, well, I'm kind of grudgingly giving up all my other little hobbies and work and whatever, and I'll spend a day with you all, but as soon as I can, I'm... Which way is it? Because as I've observed, the successful parents are the ones where the children know Dad wants to be here. Now, on the flip side of that, I don't think there's anything wrong with teaching your children that it's okay to sacrifice sometimes for the kingdom of God. You know, you're not the center of the universe, right, in a sense. I think you understand the balance there. I think it's also good to be aware of our own strengths as parents and weaknesses, our preferences and emotions. I found it interesting that Isaac and Rebekah, in part, they loved their sons because of what they were receiving from them. Isaac loved Esau because he was receiving meat from Esau. Rebekah loved Jacob because it seems like he was the one that stayed home and helped her, maybe. I don't know what all that was about. Could it be at times that selfishness is at the root of why we relate more easily with one child than the other, or why we're able to see their contribution more clearly than the other? I will be upfront with you that there have been times with our children that there were things coming through in their personality that I personally did not like. I felt not attracted to, but rather somewhat discouraged and frustrated by. And I would say because our children were born with a fallen nature, there's going to be some of that in all of them. But maybe as our children grow older, are we discerning enough to recognize when there's a personality clash? We're just kind of rubbing each other the wrong way, and how are we going to resolve this? How are we going to work through this? Or is this really a respect issue where this child is just not accepting my authority? I think that can be a bit challenging. But are we willing to be honest as parents about our own weaknesses, our own personalities? We're still a work in progress, too. The Lord is still doing His sanctifying work in us as well. I also think, this is really interesting, we could spend a lot of time thinking on this one, But valuing the contribution of our children where they are, today and in the future. Now, our children are young, and they're just, you know, our oldest is 9. But what is your 2-year-old able to contribute to your home? Have you thought about that? What are they contributing? I just went through my mind just before we came, the night before we left. Brielle is very loved in our home. She is adored. But our children love Brielle. I don't know that I would say they love to play with her. So our playroom is kind of in the basement. We used to live in a small house, and the playroom is the basement. And I don't know how many times I've been sitting upstairs, and I hear this her name being said rather negatively. Brielle! Brielle's getting into this. She's getting into that. She's tearing up this. She's tearing up that. Well, just before we left, she dumped out. How many of you have heard of diamond art? I personally wish I had not heard of it. But it is, we have diamond art in our house, and it's these tiny, exceedingly tiny, some of them, little diamonds, and somehow she had dumped quite a bit of the diamond art into the carpet down in the basement. So we were down there picking it out, and the mood toward her was a bit negative at that point. But you know, think about, every once in a while, I just like, when I get home from work and I'm sitting there and she comes running up, and you think about what your 2-year-old or 1-year-old or infant is contributing to your home. They're not actually financially really stepping in yet. The workload has not necessarily gotten a lot lighter because they're there. But wow, think about what they're contributing. The joy, just the, I mean, it's sometimes I sit there on my recliner and I'm after work, and I don't just sit on my recliner after work, but if I get a chance, I do. I don't think my children really like it very good, but, and I just observe, and I think back to when I was teaching school in an apartment by myself. It was quiet. It was me. I was kind of bored, and I think, this is just like free entertainment, you know? I mean, here they come. But, you know, beyond that then, now they're growing up a little bit, what can they contribute? And I think this is an area where I want to keep growing. Like, not just, I can be a bit of a loner, and I like to do things myself. I can just do it, you know. But how can I involve my children? How can I start getting them to contribute in devotions, you know, pray, have a song, help with the dishes, come outside? Well, it'd be easier to wash the car. I mean, my children love to spray the car off. That's the thing they want to do. Well, I just would prefer to spray it off myself, because when they spray it off, you know, some of them are getting pretty good, but some of them are spraying me and whatever. I lived with a family, I mentioned them yesterday in Belize. They had a large family. And this is one thing I feel they did so well at. Their older girls, by the time they were 14, 15, 16, were basically running the house. The one girl was in charge of the kitchen, the other was in charge of the laundry. Mom was overseeing everything and homeschooling, and it was, you know, it was a lot. And they did really well at teaching their children the skills needed for life. And then those children were able to turn around and bless the family. I don't really know that mother, I mean, even though she is a Wonder Woman in her own right, she would have had her hands extremely full to try to do everything herself. I don't think it would have been possible. And so that's something that I feel like I need to continue to grow in, and preparing our children. Maybe I have one son so far. Maybe the Lord will give us more. But, you know, how am I going to prepare them for life, teaching them the skills? It's going to take that extra time. It's going to take that extra effort. It would be easier to do it myself. I believe it is good. And this is, now I'm going to go out on a limb a little bit. So I don't have older children. So I was thinking a little bit about how this is when your children are actually young adults. And now we have adults in the house. This same family I was talking about, they have a very close family. But they came home from Belize, and they had, I think at that time, 5 or 6 adults. I mean, children from 17 on up to 20, well, one was probably pushing 30. and Ben, that's the dad's name, he looked at me and he said, yeah, there are a lot of adults in our house right now. They loved it. But, you know, I think it's important for us in this thing of our children's contribution and what they're going to contribute to society, to require respect of them, yes, to instill that in them, that dad and mom, what they say is important. But also remember to respect them. And that will look a little different as they get older. But to remember to respect them, take their wishes and opinions into consideration. And you know, if your children know that you love them and that you really want what's best for them and that you care what they think, then when dad has to say, no, I really don't think that's going to work, that's not okay, I think they'll be a lot quicker to, I can accept that. If they know that you're willing to, you know, let them, maybe even let them make the decision when it's not a, you know, it's neither here nor there. If they get the sense, and you know, even dads can be a bit selfish. Well, dad kind of wants this, right? And so, well, I'm the head of the home, so this is how it's going to be. I think over time that there's going to be a resentment that's built there. So just kind of wrapping up here, I think it's really wonderful to recognize and maybe even to be intentional. Be intentional. Be praying to God. Be seeking, God, what is your will for our family? Why have you given me these children, this child? What is your will for them? How can I best help them to grow, to flourish? I love to see families that, you know, you can tell the parents are actually using their family to further the testimony, the reaching out, building the church. Like, our family is a tool. It's being used. It's a privilege to use to think of God using us in that way. We're not just here thinking about ourselves. We're not just focused on what's fun or what we want to do, or we're not just focused on maybe the humdrum of life or just getting through day by day, but we're thinking about how can our family bless others? How can we bless others? How can we, you know, I find in our community in the South, which, by the way, when they say things have gone south, I think what they mean there is south is down, right? So south can be another word for down. But if you live in the South, you realize everybody in the South is very happy that they're there, and they can't understand why anybody would ever want to live north of the Mason-Dixon line, okay? So don't feel bad about offending the Southern people. They're proud of their South. And I love it there as well. But one thing I've noticed there is there's a strong emphasis on family culture in our community, even though most families just have one or two children. And the older people in our community love interaction with children. And so sometimes reaching out with your family can be as simple as me taking my two oldest children, walking back the lane and visiting our widower friend. I mean, it can be 10 minutes. He loves it. He just loves it. If I didn't have those children, for me to just show up by myself is fine too. He doesn't mind that. But it's even better when I bring my children along. You know? And thinking about ways that your children can help you and you can help them. And then as they get older, you know, they're like those arrows in the hand of a mighty man. Where will your children go? Will they go here? Will they go there? Maybe they'll choose to stay home. It's fine. But what are they going to be doing for God's kingdom? And how can I, as a father, as a mother, facilitate that? And I would say, I mean, this is the short answer, but I have observed that when children see their parents on fire for the kingdom of God, that zeal is attractive. And they get a hold of that. And I see families where mom and dad were all into the work of the Lord, and their children are just, as they get older, they're just coming right on in and joining in. And that's the dream I have for our children. That's the dream I have, whether it's at home or abroad. It is a privilege. It is a privilege that God has given us to raise these children. And the next time maybe your child is contributing to your home in ways that you would prefer they didn't, try to look beyond that and think, where's the potential here? What does God have in store for this child? I think it's exciting to think about that. And I love to see parents who are intentional in directing their children toward God here this week. I keep calling it weekend, but it's week. It's been a blessing for me. So Lord bless you all.